From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made later this year when Rochester voters elect a new city council, or mostly new, partially new. There are 15 different candidates running for city council that you've been hearing in various interviews in blocks of three over recent weeks. And this is, well, the last in that first round. So three more candidates for Rochester City Council. And it has been for us, and I hope for the listeners as well, a great opportunity to learn about who's running and why. In particular this year, there are people who are running for these seats from a broad cross-section of the community, different industries and backgrounds and work and life experiences. And we've asked them to come on and share with us why they've gotten involved, why they want to serve the public, and what their priorities would be. So I'll introduce our three guests who are candidates for Rochester City Council now. Erica Jones is here. Erica is a Democrat. It's nice to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Also here is Chris Eads, who is a Libertarian, and you might have heard him in the past on this program talking about a number of issues, and now running for City Council. Nice to have you, Chris.
Nice to be here again.
And Andrew Hollister is backed by the Republican and Libertarian parties and the Conservative Party as well. Is that right?
That's correct.
All right. Well, I'll start with you. You're running, Andrew, and why don't you give our listeners a little bit of background about the work that you do or what you do outside of running for office and why you decided to run.
Sure. Thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah.
So I grew up in the city of Rochester, grew up in the 19th Ward, and that's where I started my company when I was 18, graduated from Wilson. I currently live in the Lyle Otis neighborhood, and my wife and I got married last year. So one of the major motivations for me running for office is we're starting our family in the city, and people constantly ask us when we're moving to the suburbs because we're starting our family. We sat down, we talked about it, and we decided we'd rather see true change in the city, lasting change, and we would like to fight to make the city better and a place that we would be happy to raise our children and a place where people wouldn't ask, when are you moving into the suburbs?
Would you move to the suburbs?
Would I move to the suburbs?
If there's not change in the city,
would you move? Oh, if there's not change, it would be a consideration. It would.
And so you want to be a member serving the public who can help affect the changes that would convince families like you to stay.
Correct.
Okay.
And to maybe even move into the city.
Yeah, okay. Very good. Well, that will give us a lot to talk about this hour. Chris Eads, tell us why you decided to get involved this year.
I've run for office before many times, and I think that we need to have more than one party rule in the city. Last time anyone was in office that wasn't a Democrat was in 1978, and I was born in 1979. I was born here in the city of Rochester, and I've lived here continuously since 1999. And I think, competition is good, and new ideas are good, and I think that we need people who can, make that happen by bringing change. So I work downtown in the Metropolitan Building. I work for Datto. I have what I like to call a Kodak job. Right, a good white-collar job of the kind that we used to have a lot of that made the city a place that attracted the best and the brightest. And I think that, for instance, the weather's getting warmer, right? And I'd like to see, myself and my coworkers decide maybe after work, let's go hang out in the park, right? But, right now it's just grass and benches, and I think that we could do better than that. We could do things, have maybe artistic or scientific exhibits that would attract people downtown. And it wouldn't cost that much money. And, I think one theme you'll keep hearing me hit upon is that, we would have a lot more money for things like keeping the libraries and recreation centers open longer, making downtown more attractive, if we stopped giving tax breaks and handouts to wealthy developers and large corporations.
All right. So we've got a lot to talk about with Chris as well. And Erica Jones, a little bit on your background and why you have decided to run.
Sure. Well, I work at the Center for Disability Rights here in State Street. I think my work's important because the disability community is so often left behind in the conversations about development of the community, about accessibility within our region, just in general. But also, I'm part of the LGBT community. So that's another voice that is not present in the conversations being had. So I really want to listen to the community, see what they want, and then do that. Because unfortunately, what's happening is we're getting these luxury apartments all over the city that the people in the city can't live in. They can't afford it. And even if they could afford it, they're not accessible. And even if they are accessible, they're not integrated. So you have silos where disabled people are just being placed because that's what's left for them. And so I want to do things that the actual residents need.
When you say the disability community mm-hmm. is often left out, what are some more specific ways that you see the exclusion?
So, for instance, like with the housing, there's not enough housing in the city to entice disabled people to live here. It's too expensive. It's not accessible. And when it is accessible, like I was saying, disabled people are siloed in these specific apartment homes made for people with disabilities. Why can't it be integrated where disabled people and non-disabled people live? I would like to see more of that in the city because it's an added cost. People can't afford it, and they're going to move out of the city. I don't want to see that happen.
Are there city policies, though? If you're a part of city council, mm-hmm. are there tangible things the city can do to start changing that?
Yeah, definitely. We could definitely make our city more visitable. I would love to see that happen. And I would like to see some kind of incentive to the property owners that says that if you do this, you're going to bring in these people, and here's how you can do it. Because that's part of it, is knowledge and information. Many people don't realize or don't think about this portion of the community.
Okay. Chris Eads, if you're elected to Rochester City Council, what's priority one for you?
Priority one, I think, is to change the city's focus. So right now, you may have heard that the city is renewing its inexplicable war against convenience stores. You know, we continue to have the point system where, you know, small businesses are penalized for things outside of their control and forced to close. And at the same time, you know, we go out of our way to give tax breaks to wealthy developers. And I think our city, it has the wrong focus. I mean, we should be focusing on making Rochester a good place to live for everyone. We should be focusing on helping people start their own businesses, raise themselves out of poverty, hire their neighbors, and help them succeed. So what I'd like to see is I'd like to see the city focus on helping out the working class and the small business person, and stop getting in bed with wealthy developers who don't really bring us a lot of benefit.
I think the Warren administration, and I don't want to speak for them, but I think they would tell you, or maybe members of city council now, would tell you that, number one, that they're trying to pursue more loans for small businesses, more sort of startup or opportunity loans, and that I know the mayor has said she's more focused on trying to develop not just downtown but individual neighborhoods, and that the idea of breaks for developers is part of the cost of doing business in the state. But that's how it's done on the state level, that's how it's done on the local level, and if you don't do it, somebody else will, and that's just sort of the game that you have to play.
Yeah, well, I disagree. I mean, I think the best way to attract investment in the city is to have a level playing field for everybody, right? If we treat all businesses equally and we treat, you know, everyone that wants to invest in our city equally, I think that's going to bring the most investment. And I'm less concerned with attracting people from outside than I am with helping the people who live here succeed and start their own businesses and flourish.
Okay, well, let me turn to Andrew Hollister, who talked about his own experience growing up here and his desire to stay here. What would priority one be for you if you're elected?
Priority one would be getting Rochester to a point where the residents get to keep more money in their pockets. And the way that that should happen is reduction of regulations so that small businesses can flourish in the city and therefore bring jobs into the city. We have a huge issue with opportunity in the city of Rochester, and I think that extends out to the amount of available jobs in our current economy, and all of that will also tie into education in the city, which is kind of branching off a little bit, but definitely making it easier for businesses to operate in the city of Rochester will make it so that Rochester is open for jobs.
Are you talking to business owners who will tell you they either moved away or didn't open because of regulation? Are there specific regulations that you would target?
Yeah. So we kind of started a page where people could submit pieces of the city code that are too restrictive for them. and we've been kind of going through that type of stuff. I spoke with a landlord the other day who said he's moved out of the city. He owns over 10 properties in the city, and the regulations are so difficult that he's choosing not to rent those properties. He's actually leaving them vacant, still paying the taxes on them, but not renting them because it's been too difficult. So we need to stop that type of stuff because, A, we have a lot of vacant homes in Rochester. I think the number is around 3,000 vacant homes. And people are leaving the city. I just helped a company as a part of work move out of the city into Pittsford because they up and left the city. Well, that's 5 or 6 jobs. They were on East Ave. They're now on Monroe Ave in Pittsford.
Before we turn to some of the sort of the hot recent issues in Rochester that we've been asking all city council candidates about, one more question that I'll start with Andrew and come back around the table. You mentioned schools, and you mentioned not just in your recent comment schools, but also the top of the hour that, you know, schools are the consideration, that you guys get the same question that so many other couples get, which is that, well, when your kids are older, when are you going to move out? And that has been the path. You know, maybe you live in the city when it's fun and you're younger and you're child free, and then you move to the suburbs and then maybe you move back. And that route is very typical for a lot of people. Do you view the issue of raising the quality of education in Rochester starting with reducing poverty, or does it start with improving the schools?
I think that you have to attack them on both fronts. I don't think you can have one without the other. I think without a high quality education, people are going to have a hard time finding a job. And I think with low opportunity in general, it's all really interconnected. But I think to combat that, we can do something that tackles both those things at the same time. And that's opening up schools to have a focus on tradesmanships through interns or through internships. So when a student hits their junior year, they could intern with a local business in the city who may be struggling to find somebody or be willing to trade or do trade with them. And that student could graduate job ready at the age of 18 with work experience and life skills and be able to potentially have a job lined up with that tradesman that they interned or apprenticeshiped with. And that, I think, would be a huge step forward compared to what we have now. Instead of focusing on passing a test, let's focus on life skills that'll carry you to retirement.
Where did you go to school?
Wilson Magnet.
Wilson Magnet, okay. And how was your educational experience?
I had a positive educational experience. I'm one of those people that learning came naturally, but I had a lot of friends who didn't have that experience, where they struggled with taking tests and things along those lines, and friends who I would help. And, you know, everybody's built differently. We don't all learn the same. And I think that we need to identify that and realize that grading everybody by a score on a test doesn't prepare them for life. It doesn't teach you how to balance a checkbook. It doesn't teach you, you know, about your credit score and how that can impact you negatively 10 years after you graduate.
Chris Eads, when it comes to schools, what is the role of city council, and what would you, well, be focused on, if anything, when it comes to educational? How high on the list of priorities is this for you?
I ran for school board twice in 2007 and 2009. So I could sit here for the next hour and tell you everything I think is wrong with the school district and what we could do better. So I'll just say one thing, which was my major theme, is that we need to stop teaching to the test and focus on teaching kids how to learn and letting them, you know, explore their own interests. But I think as city council, there's not a lot we can do to set educational policy. And, you know, we have limited ability we basically have to approve, you know, giving the school district money. We have limited ability to control that. So what I think the city council can do is try to eliminate some of the systemic causes like poverty and homelessness. I think that, you know, one of the things I'd like to do, which I've said before, is like help people start their own business in their own neighborhood, hire their neighbors, you know, kind of like, you know, improve their situation and lift themselves out of poverty. And I think that that's what the city council can do, and that would be the most effective use of my time.
What's one very specific thing you can do, though, that's going to get more neighbors in Rochester actually starting their businesses and hiring their neighbors? I mean, it sounds great. How are you going to do it?
Well, like I alluded to before, the city is doing things which are actively hostile to businesses. They actually are forcing some businesses to close because of the point system. This war on convenience stores, which I think is misplaced for a number of reasons, needs to end. I mean, those are the kind of stores where somebody says, you know what, I'm going to start a business right here. And they open a business and they start doing business, and then the city comes in and basically does everything it can to force them to close.
And by the way, when you talk about, as you see it, a war on convenience stores, for our listeners who may not be familiar with what actually is going on, how would you tell them what's happening?
Okay, so the city feels that, and they call them corner stores. They don't call them convenience stores, which I think because they basically don't want these stores in residential neighborhoods, and you know that's what makes them convenient. But you know what they feel is that this is that they are somehow a magnet for crime, and that by forcing these businesses to close, we'll be able to reduce the crime rate and we'll get people to stop selling drugs. I really think that's the city's. Dealing with crime is the city's job. It's not the job of businesses. And it's not fair to penalize these businesses and try to force them to close on the theory that, you know, criminals are just, I don't know what they're going to do. Are they going to leave the city? Are they going to stop selling drugs? I don't think so. They're just going to move elsewhere.
All right. Erica Jones, when it comes to education and the role of city council, is there a role that you see? Then, as Chris says, sort of beyond approving budgets, how much of a priority is this for you?
This is actually a pretty big priority for me. A little about me is that I grew up in one of the poorest counties in New York, Herkimer County. We've actually had several schools close and have to combine because funding. I've been that person who couldn't afford to get food, who went to school hungry, who couldn't focus on learning. I know what it's like to be that student. So I'm also disabled. So having standardized testing is actually a big problem because the biggest amount of kids who can't pass it are disabled kids. We're expected everyone to be in an even playing field when that's not the reality. So we really need to take a look at that, and we need to figure out a different way to test our children. Standardized testing is leaving out people and leaving them behind, and they aren't going with their peers. They're hungry. So we need to make sure that kids are going to school happy, healthy, and learning what they need to learn.
All right, let's talk about some issues that have been big in the news recently. And right when we started the series of interviews with candidates for Rochester City Council a number of weeks back was around the time that Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren announced a decision on Parcel 5. And members of City Council have sort of had different opinions on that. If you were on City Council, Eric Jones, would you feel like the mayor made a good call on that, going with a performing arts center there?
I'm really hesitant about Parcel 5 because all the plans that I've seen from the mayor and other groups that are protesting the plans, none of them really seem too accessible. So for me personally, I don't really like any of the plans. I think that space should be a shared space. Everyone should be able to use it. And if you put a performing arts center, my community, the disability community, typically can't afford to go to shows. So we wouldn't be able to use that anyway.
So not an inclusive decision.
Right.
Okay. Chris Eads, Parcel 5.
I would like it to be more green space. I mean, I think we need more green space in the city. As I was alluding to before, we need to make the city a place where people would just like to hang out, on an evening or a weekend and have interesting things to do. I think that would do a lot. If we attract people, downtown, then they're going to patronize the businesses there. It's going to help everybody. I remember when I was a kid, I would go to when the Greasetown and Longwich malls were separate in Greece, they had those things with the concave mirrors and the things with the lights and the sounds. You could push the buttons. There are things that would entertain people, right? And they did that to bring them to the mall. And I think that we could, if we changed our priorities and invested in this instead of elsewhere, we could have things like artistic exhibits, things which are educational, things which are fun to do, and we could put those things downtown. And you know, by having more parks and more places to situate those things, we make Rochester a city where people want to be and not just work and then leave and go back to the suburbs.
Andrew Hollister, Parcel 5 decision. What do you think?
I love the idea of Visionary Square. I love the idea of having a place in the city of Rochester where small businesses can start and build from. I do not believe a performing arts center is going to make Rochester a destination. I've said a lot of times, jobs will make Rochester a destination. No building, is going to make the city a destination, especially when we live in a time where people are leaving the city. So if we can't keep our residents, how are we going to bring in new people? Jobs will bring in new people. An open space where people can start a micro business, flourish, grow, add employees, add jobs. I think it's a wonderful idea.
RBTL might say, but we are creating jobs with the Performing Arts Center.
I would say that the request for proposal did ask to not use for taxpayer dollars. They haven't shown how they're going to do that with a performing arts center. We actually talked with a few people today who said they didn't feel the performing arts center is what the community's been asking for. And I would agree with that. At the last few city council meetings, there was only one person who said, we like the idea of a performing arts center. I don't think it's going to create jobs the same way that Visionary Square would, because we'll create some jobs for some temporary construction. And then maybe we'll create a few jobs in the city to run the Performing Arts Center, but it's not going to be open all the time. And those people might not live in the city that run the Performing Arts Center. They may come from outside the city and take more money out of the city, which is what we see with a lot of large development in the city. We build big buildings, a big company comes in, they employ the people from the suburbs, not the people from the city.
And by the way, when it comes to tax dollars, as you mentioned, Arnie Rothschild from RBTL on this program told me that if they ask for tax dollars, they will ask from the state, not locally, and that they would ask for maybe up to $10 or $15 million from New York State. Does that placate you at all?
I'm not a huge fan of using tax dollars.
At all? Doesn't matter where the source is?
No, I would love to see a space that the community could come together, fund it themselves, and make it their own.
Okay, we're talking to three candidates for Rochester City Council. That's Andrew Hollister, Chris Eads, and Erica Jones. And we're working through a variety of issues that council and, the city of Rochester have to face. And housing and development have come up a number of times here. In fact, Erica Jones says that's near the top of the list, especially for the disability rights community. When it comes to housing, one of the questions we have is sort of on how neighborhoods develop and how, neighborhoods, quote unquote, improve. One of the issues that sort of dovetails with that is when gentrification happens, and if that is a inherently negative or positive thing, how do you see housing in neighborhoods developing right now from your perspective, and how might that that situation change?
So I am seeing a lot of gentrification in the Rochester neighborhoods.
Is that a negative term to you?
It is. But just from the communities that I am a part of, it really is, because it's pushing those specific people out. They cannot afford any longer to live there. So I'm deathly afraid that if we allow this to continue, there's not going to be any space in Rochester for if you're a senior, if you're disabled, if you have a low income just in general. And then where are they going to go?
Okay, so is there anything council can do policy-wise to protect people who are living in communities and neighborhoods where, for example, we talked gentrification a month, 2 months ago, talked to a guy who lives in the neighborhood of the arts, and he said, he feels like he's been part of what has gentrified that neighborhood, and he's got a little bit of guilt about that. But he says, look, there have got to be policies that protect people who've been in a place for a long time, and all of a sudden your assessments are going up 50% in a decade or less, and you can't afford to pay the taxes. Are there things that we can do?
Well, I think part of it has to come with the property owners. I really do. I think that if we made apartment buildings and homes more accessible and more integrated, then you would have different levels of income within these buildings, and then people could afford to stay here.
Okay. Andrew Hollister, gentrification. Does the term, is it a negative or positive term to you? Do you see it happening around Rochester?
I think the term in general has a negative connotation, but I think some people see it in a positive way, where gentrification can lead to positive integration of additional cultures into the area. Rochester is a very diverse place, and it wouldn't be if people of all different ethnicities and backgrounds moved into the city. So the term, I feel, has a negative feel to it, but I think there can be some positive aspects to it.
Okay. Are you concerned that there are neighborhoods where people who've been longtime residents of various backgrounds being pushed out because things are, you know, home values are kind of going up quickly, that kind of stuff?
I haven't seen home values shoot up too much in the city of Rochester. I think that once the vacant home issue gets resolved, that we would potentially see that. I believe the right answer to that is going to be allowing people to keep more money in their pocket. And to do that, we need to look at regulations, cut fees on things like that. But also for families, if and as it becomes an issue, there could be a property tax cap. If you live in a home for a certain number of years, why can't the city say, we're going to cap your property tax and maybe match the number of years you've lived in your home? So if you've lived in your home for 5 years, we're going to cap it for the next 5 years. Something along those lines to protect the residents, encourage them to stay so they don't have to leave and be a part of the community that's forming, but also not a situation where we're giving somebody a handout to keep them to stay in the city.
That's interesting, because one of the proposals we heard when we talked gentrification a while back was an idea that I think we've seen in Atlanta and a few other places that says, if you've been in a place for X amount of years, say it's a decade or more or 20 years, and within a five-year span, if your assessments go up by 50%, at that point, we cap it. You're not going to pay any more. What you're proposing is a kind of cap for everybody to say, you know, if you're in a neighborhood and you're there for a number of years, you know, we're going to make sure that whatever's happening doesn't kind of overly spike on your tax bill for everybody, right?
Correct. Yeah, I'm a fan of equally applying things across the board. I typically don't like it when somebody gets special treatment over somebody else.
Okay, Chris Eads, when it comes to gentrification, what do you see?
Well, you know, I think, and this is, you know, going back to what I've been saying before, is that, you know, our approach right now is that we subsidize development and we try to bring in people from outside of the city. And that's, you know, just driving up the rents in the neighborhood, when what we should be doing is allowing people to start their own businesses and hire their neighbors and allow the people who actually live in those neighborhoods to become wealthier. And then when the, you know, if that causes the property assessments to go up, it will be going up because the people that live there and have been living there are wealthier and have more money in their pockets.
One of the things that you have talked about is how the city treats its homeless population as well. And that you've got ideas for what could be done differently. Tell me a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, it's not hard to improve on what the city's been doing. You may remember in 2014, after privatizing a parking garage, the city kicked out the homeless people. They set up a tent encampment under a bridge out of everybody's way, and the city responded by sending in bulldozers to destroy it. That is, you know, exactly the wrong approach. I think that what we should be doing is we should be trying to help the homeless people, you know, become people with jobs that have homes, and there are ways that we can do that. I mean, and some people are dealing with mental illness and addiction issues, and that's, you know, going to be an obstacle in their way, and we're going to have to help them with that. But there are other people who simply have had bad luck or have just been homeless long enough that they are sort of trapped in that mindset, in that mode. We have a lot of vacant houses. We could be, you know, giving people an opportunity to live there, to have a bed to sleep in, to be able to take a shower, right, to have some nice clothes. That always helps if you're going to have, say, a job interview. Put them in a situation where they have a home and, you know, give them some assistance in, you know, staying in that situation and becoming able to stay in that situation in the long term. And that's what I'd like to see the city do.
Is that realistic? You know, if you're on council, you'll be one member. You think this can happen?
Well, I think if we elect somebody that's a you know, a third party candidate, I think that people, you know, that's going to be major. Right? I mean, no one that's not a Democrat has been elected in my entire life, and for somebody that's, say, a libertarian to get elected. I mean, I think people are going to see the writing on the wall. They're going to realize that change needs to happen. And, you know, I'm not going to get in there and dictate what could be done, but I think that people would be willing to work with me.
Well, let me talk to the Democrat then, Erica Jones. How did you feel about what happened with the tent city in 2014, Sanctuary Village?
That's devastating. It really is. They're human beings, and we all had deserve the right to have a shelter over our head and have warm food and clothing. And so I would really like to tackle this issue. We do have vacant homes. We have people without homes. It makes sense to me. Why not help them get into these homes?
There's a way to connect that, is what you're saying. Okay. Andrew Hollister, how did you feel about how the city handled the homeless situation in 2014?
I think it was awful, personally. To take what little those people had and destroy it, you know, that was their personal property. I would like to see something similar, but I've heard that the city of Rochester has a lot of vacant property that we're paying tax dollars to upkeep, heat in the winter, things along those lines. And I've heard from residents that, you know, they don't want to take the vacant homes and put somebody that they don't necessarily know knows how to take care of themselves in the homes in their neighborhoods. And so I think a fair compromise would be, if we're paying for space to be heated already and to be maintained already, why don't we establish a shelter that the homeless people in Rochester can live in and run themselves, and ask community leaders and small businesses to volunteer an hour a week to hold a class on what it is they do. So if you're a banker, if you ask people in the community, we have a wonderful community in Rochester. I think if we ask people to donate an hour of their time once a month to teach these people how to get a job, and we give them just a little bit, and give them ownership, let them run the shelter, let them learn leadership through this type of thing, I think that would prepare them for success and give them a true path out of that situation.
You've talked about financial literacy as well. Is that part of this as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's not just a problem with our homeless population. I think that's a problem in Rochester in general. I have a lot of friends who are my age who don't know how to put together a budget, something that I always took for granted. Understanding how costs and expenses work and calculating what my paycheck will be and what my bills are and what I'll have at the end of the month. Kids are growing up, they don't know what a checkbook is. They don't have a bank account. They have no idea how their credit score works. And then someday they realize that maybe they want to do something. They have a terrible credit score, they have a ton of debt, and they're really stuck in that situation because nobody taught them in the very beginning how to manage their finances.
All right, and by the way, if you're elected, are you going to ask the mayor and city council to take pay cuts?
I am. I'm going to suggest that pay is not a static number. I'm going to suggest that pay on city council and for the mayor is based on the median income of the people that they represent. So if they're doing a good job making jobs available in the city and the people in the city are prospering, then their salaries go up. If they're not doing so much and they're pushing forth policies where we see the median income continue to go down, well, so are their salaries.
It's an interesting idea. Anybody disagree on that? I know maybe not one that on the top of your priority list, but it's an interesting idea. Okay, so let's take our only break of the hour. I'm way late for our break, and we're going to come back with three candidates for Rochester City Council: Andrew Hollister, Chris Eads, Erica Jones. And this is our ongoing series of conversations with the candidates for City Council. There are well over a dozen this year, and we've seen people from a lot of different sectors and parts of our community decide that they want to get involved, and so we take the opportunity once a week to hear from them, along with your questions as well. So let's take that break and come right back with them on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on the Next Connections. First hour, how much do you know about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency? The value of Bitcoin has gone through the roof. Is there a bubble? Or is cryptocurrency the way of the future, and could it eventually replace the dollar? Then in our second hour, we preview a film coming to the Little Theater called Real Boy, a coming-of-age story of a 19-year-old with dreams of musical stardom going through transition, a gender transition. We'll talk about it. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I know Erica Jones wanted to mention something. We've been talking about the homeless population, and you wanted to mention Monroe Community Hospital specifically. Why?
So we have nursing facilities and institutions throughout our county that those people, that's not a home. And I would really like to see the definition of homeless change to include them.
Okay, and that's something you think council can do?
I think that it would be a good effort to at least try.
And what would the impact be for them?
They would be able to apply for so much more that the homeless population is currently able to go for, back money, resources to get out, those kinds of things.
Okay. Chris Eads, I know you wanted to mention something that we hear a lot, much more about on the federal level, and that's debt.
Right, yeah. So currently the city pays more than $30 million every year in interest on our debt. There's been some talk about tax cuts, and I think that the better thing to do would be to pay down our debt. If we pay down our debt and we have, you know, another $30 million available because we're not having to pay interest on that, I mean, then we could use that for a tax cut. We could use that to increase services, right? I think a lot of, you know, there can be some disagreement about, you know, whether we should spend more money or whether we should give people a tax cut. But having $30 million more in our budget that we're not paying to service our debt, I think is something that everyone should be able to get behind, and I think would benefit everyone.
I want to also ask to all of you about an issue, and I want to start with Chris because I will say that the many candidates for city council and these candidates among them have a lot of specific ideas. And so I should have done this earlier, but Chris, are you online, a website or anybody can access information?
Yeah. So you go to vote-for-chris.net, and that's my website. If you want to find my Facebook page, there's a Facebook icon there that you can click as well.
Okay. Andrew Hollister?
Yep. You can find me at Hollister4Council.com, and you can use the number 4 or the word 4. Either one will work.
Okay. Erica Jones.
EricaJones.NationBuilder.com.
And Erica is E-R-I-C-K-A.
Yes.
Okay. So one more time on the website?
It's EricaJones.NationBuilder.com.
Okay. So you can get more on their specific ideas. And here's, I was going to ask because our audience has asked about police-community relations. And I want to start with Chris Eads because you've got a number of ideas on this, including this. You said you want to explore options for making the chief of police an elected position, right?
Yeah.
Because you say that, you know, by and large, the sheriff's department does a good job serving the community, and one reason is that the sheriff is directly accountable to the people via election. So you would pursue making the chief of Rochester Police an elected position?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it's when you have, you know, someone directly elected, they're obviously more accountable to the people. This was why when mayoral control of the schools was an issue, I opposed that, because I think by the same logic, you know, an elected school board only deals with education and people can vote just on that. An elected police chief is only dealing with the issues of crime and public safety. And so when people are making that decision on who to vote for, it's not muddied by other issues and priorities.
Anybody here want to agree or disagree with that? That is certainly a new one for Rochester City Police. Andrew?
Yeah, I don't feel strongly for or against it. I like the idea of electing the chief. I also know that he's appointed by somebody who is elected by the people, mm-hmm. So I don't have a strong feeling for or against.
Okay. Erica?
I do like the idea. I would definitely have to look closely at that.
Okay, so Chris, that's one idea, but let me just back it up and ask you more broadly. How are police-community relations in Rochester, generally speaking, and do you think they need to be improved, and do you have ideas on how that can happen?
I do think they need to be improved. You know, there have been a number of high-profile incidents. You may remember the Emily Good, when Emily Good was arrested for filming the police, and then the police, like, ticketed her supporters for parking too close to the curb, which, like, is something that the police rarely do. I think when you ask people, and I know there have been, you know, surveys that have been taken of, you know, do you trust the police? A few years ago, the city's own survey showed that a majority of people that living in the city did not trust the police or had issues with the police. You know, I think we need to have more community policing, and we are moving in this direction of assigning police to individual neighborhoods. I would like the police to live in the city. So that's one of the things I'm proposing, is you would actually pay them a $10,000 bonus on top of their salary to police officers if they lived in the city. I think that has a number of improvements besides, you know, they get to know their neighbors. If police officers live in a neighborhood, that just serves as a deterrent to crime right there. And that's, you know, brings people closer to the community because they live there. I also think a civilian review board should be strengthened, should be given, you know, subpoena power so they can compel testimony. And I think the proceedings should be open to the public as well so that we know exactly what's going on. And I think that would go a long way towards, you know, building bridges and trust in the community.
Chris, the idea of a civilian review board has come up a number of times in both the mayoral race and in city council races this year. Why do you think currently it's not enough?
Well, as I said, they don't have subpoena power. They can't compel people to testify and give evidence. The proceedings are secret. We don't know what's going on. They can only make recommendations that the chief of police can ignore, which I think is another reason to make that an elected position. Right now, I mean, it's better than nothing, but it's not very effective.
Okay. Andrew, how about you? When it comes to police-community relations, do you agree with Chris that they're not good or that they're not good enough right now?
I do. I've spoken to a number of people, residents and police officers, and sometimes the police officers are residents as well. And both sides feel as if they've been segmented away from each other. The police feel like they've been dragged through the mud by the media, and the community feels as if the police does not represent what the police should in the city. The police feel as if there's a few bad people that have dirtied their name across the board, and the community feels like there have been things that have happened that are just totally unacceptable. So the relationship needs to be improved. I have a very similar proposal where if officers lived in the city, they'd get a property tax credit, similar to a bonus, just a little different, geared towards home ownership, because I believe that ownership really is kind of the first step of feeling that you're a part of the community and you truly want to improve it. So that's how I feel about that.
Okay, Erica?
I definitely feel that a change needs to happen. The people that I have spoken to, the communities that I've spoken to, specifically the trans community and the disability community, those are where you're going to find issues between the communities and the police. I agree that more policemen have to live in the city. And I absolutely agree that there needs to be an incentive. I really do like the idea of a tax credit. And I think that as far as the review board goes, you need to have representation on that board of the people that actually live here. So I would like to see people from the disability community, the trans community, and the African-American community be able to go and give their input and have it actually matter. That's the important part, is they can say all they want, have information jotted down into paper, and then just doesn't go anywhere. So as long as that information is being put into practice, that's all that matters.
You want people to actually listen to you. So yeah. Do people who get parking tickets. And let me ask Andrew Hollister about something when it comes to parking. By the way, every time I say parking, I waited till it was 150. Our listeners would talk about parking in Rochester all week, probably for 10 hours a week if we would. It's always amazing because people get fired up. I mean, some people, you know, are very much into sort of the urbanist community. They want more walkability. They think there's too much when it comes to big empty parking lots. Others think that, you know, they want to be able to drive right to where they're going, park right in front. And by God, if I get a ticket, I'm never coming back to the city of Rochester again, says the guy who still has an outstanding parking ticket. So let me ask you how you feel about parking and the way the city currently handles this issue when it comes to especially visitors to the city.
Parking has got to be one of the biggest barriers, I think, in people coming into the city. And you wouldn't think it, but I constantly hear from people that say, oh, I want to go to this place. Oh, no, parking's awful. I'm going to get a ticket. I'm not going. I mean, it literally drives people out of the city. And then for the people who live here, if you get a parking ticket, or even if you don't live here, it is extremely difficult to get it taken care of, unless you're just going to pay it. If you're just going to pay the fine, you might as well call it a parking tax and just pay it outright. If you want to dispute it, what you have to do is you have to go, and first thing you got to do is pay for more parking. That's number one. You gotta go pay for more parking.
What if you get a ticket? What if you get a parking ticket while you're waiting to find a parking?
Oh yeah, and I'll get to that because it's happened to people. I've literally had people tell me about this. So you go downtown, you pay for parking. You go in there. you can't get an appointment in advance. You can't get an allocated time. It's just first come, first served. It's always terribly overcrowded, and you wait for hours to have your ticket heard. And if you parked at one of the meters, you're running out constantly, hoping they don't call your name while you're gone, and refilling the parking meter. Then when you get in there, typically, and there's been quite a few articles about how the city of Rochester really does not accept disputes to parking anyways. So what happens when you get a parking ticket and you want to fight it? You pay for more parking, you lose half a day to a day's worth of work, and chances are you still pay for the fine. I would love to see this switch to an online system where you can just go online. I mean, you can pay your water bill online. The city has services online where you can go online and say, I want to dispute this ticket. You get a time. You show up and you're seen at that time. And it's an in and out. You could do it over your lunch break or take an hour off from work to just do what, you know, everybody should have the opportunity to dispute something without losing a day's worth of work and paying for more parking.
And what's the... That's one idea, but what's the specific thing that council is going to do to change all of that?
I believe the process itself needs to change. Another thing that could change, and interestingly enough, I was at U of R talking to voters who go to school at U of R, and they said parking's bad for them too, because the city owns the area around U of R, and they get parking tickets there too, and they have trouble disputing them. And another problem that people have brought up is the fact that we have the alternating side parking, which is confusing to a lot of people in the city. It causes tickets that nobody really got harmed for that crime of parking on the wrong side of the street. The suburbs around us only have the side-to-side parking in the winter months because that's what it was designed for the plows to be able to get through. So I think something city council could do to alleviate the parking is make the parking effective the same way the suburbs have it, where the alternating sides are November to April or whatever it is. And people really only get a ticket if they're blocking the street. We shouldn't be paying somebody around to purposely find people and take their money.
So that's one of Andrew's specific ideas. Let me ask Chris and Erica, sort of tangentially related to that. There's been a lot of questions about what happens, whether it's above ground parking, underground parking, or just totally walkable space on the Interloop, and what the city is going to decide to do on that space. We see a lot of things happening there now. Chris, what should happen with that space? I say the eastern third that's being filled, obviously. That's what I'm talking about. Go ahead.
Well, I have to admit, parking is not at the top of my list of concerns. I do agree with what Andrew was saying. You know, I think in terms of the amount of parking, I do think we need to balance the ability of people to drive cars, the ability of people to ride bicycles and take public transportation. You know, so if you've ever been to you know, New York City or San Francisco, I mean, they have a lot more problems with parking and traffic than we do. We're actually, for an urban area, pretty fortunate there. So I think while the process improvements could be made, I'm not in a hurry to build more parking lots. I mean, if we have more places for people to go, more businesses, then obviously there should be an increase in parking that comes along with that. But in terms of what we're going to do with the inner loop, I'm not a big fan of central planning by the city. I mean, I think that you know, we should just make that space available for people to buy and to build businesses or homes or whatever they think is what they want to do.
Erica?
So I'm actually a transportation advocate. So this is a fairly important issue. I think that we need to do better on enforcement as far as parking where you need to park. And I realize that there is a big problem in the city. I live right in the middle of the city, you know, over by the Board of Elections. So I do understand that there is a problem. I think that could be addressed, though, with increased walkability, because if you have walkability, you have room for wheelchairs. That would be really great for our community as well. So as far as the inner loop goes, I mean, I'm with Chris. You could take that space and do other things with it.
Okay. So before the hour is out, let me just read one quick note from a listener named Ray Ray. who says, Evan, on today's show, you've brought forth the Parcel 5 discussion with the mayor's decision on a performing arts center. He says, what about saying the city council still needs to vote on the mayor's proposal? And he says, you know, the vote may be a long way since the project is still significantly underfunded. That's true for the moment. He says, it's also a proposal that was made up in private and not part of the public process of review like Visionary Square and Galena proposal. It was decided on. It was not decided on. It was conjured up. And he just wants to kind of push back on the idea that this is preordained. Ray Ray says, this is not done. And the mayor, it's not just that the mayor spoke and that means it's decided, that city council has a role here and that the media also has a role with not just spreading the idea that it is a done deal. Ray Ray, point taken on that. I appreciate the email. And certainly council does have a role. Not only existing members of council, but we've heard from a lot of candidates for office who've been talking about the importance of council in some ways being a check on it. So Ray Ray, thank you for that. And it's a good point, and we will continue to cover that. Real quick. Well, I want to follow you more online one more time. Your website, Erica, go ahead.
ericajones.nationbuilder.com.
Okay, Chris Eads, find you where?
Vote-for-chris.net, and that's F-O-R.
Very good. And Andrew Hollister?
Hollisterforcouncil.com.
I want to thank all of you for being here. Andrew, nice having you. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Chris Eads, nice to see you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Erica, thank you very much for coming in as well.
Thank you.
And those are candidates for Rochester City Council. We've talked to 15 of them now. A lot of people from across our community deciding to get involved and wanting to serve our community. And hope you've appreciated having a chance to hear them at length on this program over recent weeks. Our thanks to John Andrus, the engineer today, and Megan Max, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a lovely afternoon and weekend. And we're right back with you Monday on Member Supported Public Radio.